Welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Music That Matters, an hour dedicated to the sounds that form, comfort, and entertain us, our music that matters. I'm host and producer Jim Tevenin. On this, our Opus 12, something a bit different. There are two paths to immortality for a musician. One is the making of legendary recordings. The other is teaching, which lives on in one's students. So today, Vern Windham profiles a violinist who fills both categories. The name Camilla Wicks is not universally known, even among the classical music community. A fact of her current obscurity is her connection to the Northwest in general and musicians of the inland Northwest in particular. She died on November 25th of this year at age 92. On the instigation of one of her admirers, violinist Kelly Ferris, we will learn of her through her students.
Camilla Wicks, born in California in 1928, was a true prodigy of the violin. She played her first major concertos as a 7 and 8 year old, and by the time she had reached her mid-teens, was playing concertos with the major orchestras of the world. Her recording career began just after World War II with her legendary recordings of the major violin concertos. Her career was sidelined by marriage, the birth of 5 children, then divorce. That began her teaching career, which took her to many of the major music schools of the country, including the West and the Northwest. Let's begin the regional part of this story with Kelly Ferris, former longtime concertmaster of the Spokane Symphony.
The memory of Camilla Wicks has stayed with me since my youth in Walla Walla. I was probably 15 or 14, and she came through and did a recital on the community concert series. I wish I'd remembered what she played, but this was the same series in this little town of Walla Walla that had featured Isaac Stern and Yehudi Menuhin and I think even Michael Rabin at those days. The memory of hers playing the sound stayed with me even though I didn't understand what she was doing. And then maybe like all of her reviews that you can, international reviews, they all comment on her beauty and what she was wearing. But I'm sorry, I do remember how she looked. It's hard to forget. And not really keeping track of her and then finding out in my years in Spokane that here she was in Leavenworth, Washington, of all places, near Icicle Creek, with a cabin and entertaining and teaching students in summers. She had a career of teaching after kind of giving up on her international career to raise 5 kids. Think about that. After her marriage imploded, she was holed up in Leavenworth, but providing a kind of summer-long soiree for young people. I advised several of my students or Spokane kids to look her up, and several of them did. And then she went on to teach at the University of Washington, which seemed like, what is this great international artist doing in my neighborhood? I visited her in Leavenworth also and saw the wonderful atmosphere that she created. It was like a bunch of teenagers and young adults all living in a summer camp together. And she was a warm, welcoming person. Everybody helped cook. She let people earn their keep by maintaining the house. The money was not anything of interest to her, although I'm sure she had to think about it throughout her career. In fact, one aspect of money, I do know that I played on one of her bows that she had had to sell when under financial duress. She had a priceless tort bow, which should probably have been valued in hundreds of thousands. Well, it was. And so we say less than scrupulous people, when she was doing a fire sale, quote unquote, of her instruments, completely underpriced things. When she played a recital here in the 90s, it was on an Australian violin, brand new, made by a guy named Smith, which is a beautiful instrument, but that's where the story of instruments goes with her having to part with these treasures to support her five kids and her somewhat itinerant career. So she went to teach at the University of Washington for a year, I believe, only, but several Spokane people, area people, wound up following her there. I think Meredith Arxey, and who now teaches in Pullman, and Kathy Haslip, and Nick Wetzel, and others looked her up, and then they all wound up just following this violin presence in their lives. She was the best. She was like a mother in some ways, but not completely. She ran a tight ship as far as your violin playing was concerned. I think at the end of her teaching was San Francisco, where Mandy Howard was her student. And we're so lucky to have her here, keeping the tradition of beautiful, warm, expressive personality and playing that certainly was promoted by Camilla's teaching. She's been a constant presence in my mind, my violin mind, ever since I was a young person in Walla Walla.
Learn more about this amazing player, insightful teacher, and whole person from some of the students which Kelly mentioned, beginning with Mick Wetzel, and then a little later his wife-to-be, Stacy.
When I got back in April, I contacted one of my heroes, honestly, Kelly Ferris, and asked him if he would help me kind of get my chops back over the summer. And I had four or five lessons with Kelly that summer. And he suggested that I go play for this woman that I had never heard of before, Camilla Wicks, that she was over in Leavenworth. And this was back in the day before cell phones, obviously. And I went to my dad's office and pulled off the shelf a phone book for Cashmere, Dryden, and Leavenworth. And just went down the phone book and found Camilla Wicks on Prowl Road. And I thought, this has got to be her. And just called her. She said, yes, honey, come over and play for me. She came to the door in her apron. She was baking, and it was just kind of like, who is this person? She seemed pretty amazing, very maternal person. And after I finished playing the Chaconne, she said, you know, this is as much my audition for you as it is for me. Can I play your violin? And that's unusual for somebody to ask to play your instrument. Usually it's such a personal thing that, you know, you wouldn't feel comfortable playing someone else's violin because, you know, it's just a little bit different and maybe not, you know, your best playing on someone else's violin. But she took my violin and she played Ditone 5, the concerto. This is I think the first maybe 4 or 5 pages of that. And it was jaw-dropping. I was so blown away by kind of her personality and how, you know, maternal she was and just nice lady. And then, you know, with my violin in her hands, it was like, this is like world-class playing, and I'm in Kashmir, Washington. But anyway, that was my first time that I ever heard her play. I studied with her over that summer. In that interim, she'd been offered a job at the University of Washington. The next year, she was offered a position at the University of Michigan. And my wife and I followed her there. I'll let her tell that rest of that story. But we both followed her from the University of Washington to the University of Michigan. I studied violin with her there.
Mick Wetzel and his creation story, and it's a good one already. And then you've mentioned Stacy, your now wife, because didn't Camilla figure in to something here?
I think she credits herself with us getting together. So the year that Mick went to Tanglewood was actually that summer, was the same summer that I met Camilla for the first time. Previous to that, I'd had 2 years at Juilliard studying with Galamian. Evangelamian, and due to family finances and other sisters at other expensive schools, I come from a family of 5 girls who all are musicians. My parents said, just come home for a year. Joshua Heifetz is teaching at USC, and I got a full scholarship and studied with him there. At the end of the year with him, I was looking for another teacher, and a brochure showed up in the mail with this woman on the front, and I just thought she looked very draconian. I was not impressed at all. And it was an endorsement for a summer seminar program in Hidden Valley, California, which is near Carmel. And my mother grabbed the brochure and said, you have to study with this woman. She and my mom are about the same age. My mother's a violinist, and I decided to do what my mother said. And I had a similar experience to Mick. I stood outside her door there in Carmel, listening to the most amazing playing I'd ever heard in my life. And I just thought, I'm just excited to meet this woman and have her hear me. And she did the same thing. She played, at that point I was working on the Bach C major solo sonata, and she proceeded to use her own violin, but she played through almost the entire sonata for me. And at that point I was completely hooked. So that began my time with Camilla, which extended for at least 10 years of solid studying. She taught privately in Carmel that summer, then she moved to San Francisco. I followed her there. I stayed with her there for about 3 years. I did a stint in Banff. I went back to Juilliard to try and finish the degree, but all roads led back to Camilla. And so it was in 1983. She said, come to the University of Washington. I can get you a full scholarship. There's a nice young boy who just came home from his mission, and I'm sure that they'll be excited to meet him. And I was very dubious about that, but she had a sixth sense, I guess, that this was going to be a match made in heaven. And so I did leave Juilliard at that point for the second time and did meet Mick. And we had classes together. We played chairs together. We went to church together. It was probably inevitable, although we tried to set each other up with other people. But Camilla kept, you know, a close rein on us and just had this feeling that we were meant to be together. And sure enough, in the spring of 84, Mick proposed, and we were married that Christmas. Camilla did, between the ceremony and our reception, she performed Lark Ascending in a concert that was really very special for both of us. Thank you.
We've learned about Camilla Wicks, the warm and caring person, from Mick and Stacy Wetzel, members of the Los Angeles Philharmonic. Now let's learn more about Camilla Wicks, the teacher, from Amanda Howard Phillips, the principal second violinist of the Spokane Symphony and member of the Spokane String Quartet.
I can truly say that in my musical life, no other person has had a greater impact on the musician I've become and also the human being that I've become. I was I read a quote from her online just a little bit ago, from her describing her lessons with Louis Persinger at Juilliard when she was a kid. And she said this: "A lesson was always an experience of laughter or listening to his stories of description. And he communicated emotions not merely in a theoretical way. He sought to develop a sense of humanity and spirituality in his pupils." And I thought, wow, that could be a quote about her, about Camilla herself. One of my most wonderful treasured memories from studying with her was the first major work that I learned with her, which was the Prokofiev Second Violin Concerto. And the way her intense demanding of just the purest intonation, she would write these little arrows up and down in every single tiny passage work. It was like nothing I'd ever experienced before. And we used that piece to develop not only completely develop my concept of technique, but also just the music. It was just breathtaking the way she described the slow movement as falling in love. It is a treasured memory I'll never forget. She was this wonderful combination of demanding and kind and nurturing. She fostered such a sense of family in our studio. I was telling my husband the other day, it was when I first went to study with her, and the way that her students spoke of her with such reverence, I almost thought it was a little bit cult-like. I'd never experienced anything like that before. But of course, I was swept up into the cult as well. I think that we, you know, any of us that have studied music at the college level, we have been fortunate enough to have had a great teacher, we can relate to that kind of hero worship that can happen. But I've never seen the kind of the level of devotion from her students, even decades after they studied with her. People just speak of her with such love and reverence. I think it was her kindness and her nurturing, but also just her deep sense of fairness and devotion of the highest level to the music itself. I just remember the sense of family that she fostered in the studio. She had a house in San Francisco, and I think there were three extra bedrooms that she rented to students. As you can imagine, being a poor college student in an expensive city like San Francisco, I found myself one semester in an apartment that was really gross and not somewhere that I wanted to live. And she insisted that I come and sleep on her couch. And so I slept on her couch for 2 weeks while I found a new place to live. Just her generosity and her kindness. I try to emulate her every day in my teaching. I just can't understate how important she was to me, and heartbroken I am. There's people that feel, you know, you feel like they should just live forever. It's just so strange to think that she's gone. I saw something just a couple of days ago, and a quote, and it said, "You will be remembered by the beauty you leave." That really stuck home because I feel like she left so much beauty.
Thank you.
One of Camilla Wick's last students was Caitlin McSherry, young woman from Sandpoint, who at the time was the concertmaster of the Spokane Youth Symphony, and went off to the San Francisco Conservatory to study with her. And Caitlin has a lot to say about the whole person of Camilla Wicks.
I feel like she loved music so much, and I've always loved playing music so much, so I wonder if she just kind of saw some of that also within it. And just the most humble, inspiring, just sweet person at the same time. You know, I feel like she never made anyone feel intimidated or, you know, would always be encouraging and just creating the best music that you could yourself. And so, you know, sitting in studio class was always just a wonderful thing. Every week, all her students would come in, and actually often past students would even come drop by just to listen and visit and say hi. And when I was working with her, you know, at that point, even her health wasn't as well. So she was either walking with a cane or in a wheelchair the last year, and still she had the most enthusiastic energy, and she'd pick up her violin and could play anything perfectly. She knew every single thing at any point in music, and it just would always sound amazing. It was really just quite the experience to, you know, have been a part of that also. And just the energy she had, her eyes were so sharp and bright, you know, and she'd have this smile that lit up her whole face. And when she was playing, her face would change with every single character and emotion as she was playing. You know, so really was just something to behold. It really was. And something I really enjoyed with working with her was really just, you know, learning the music itself. It wasn't just about the bowings and the fingerings, you know, you have to do this shift here. You know, it was more, what is the intent of the music? What did the composer want? And always just thinking about how can we play the music itself the best way? And so I thought that was such a wonderful framework to just have everything built upon. And I, you know, over these last couple of weeks, I've definitely been reflecting a lot more on working with her and thinking back about all these basic, you know, groundwork of musicality that she's laid in with the lessons that now I still use all the time. You know, things I don't even really think about anymore because they're just so standard. They were there from such an early time. So I feel like she really influenced so much of what I do now to this day still. Let's see, also because she knew she was retiring, she wanted to cover as much different type of music and style she could with me. I felt like, you know, she was like, all right, we're going to start with the Bruch Concerto because you haven't done that yet. And then we're going to do Beethoven and Bach and Mozart. And we're going to cover all the styles so you know how to play them and know how to play them properly. It was always about doing it properly and with the intent of the composer. You know, so I felt like that was great. She had like very much a goal in mind of what she wanted to accomplish with the time she had. And so I've been pulling out her music that I worked on with her actually over the last handful of days, kind of going through the notes she'd mark in, bits and pieces. And it's been a fun trip down memory lane for sure. So much of it is just like an image in my mind and a feeling in my mind of what it was like working with her also, because it was long enough ago, you know. So, and just her face, like those sharp eyes and her smile, like just like I feel like that's what I think of with her, because she was this generous, inspiring lady that just wanted everyone to just love music and have a lovely life at the same time. And I feel like that was something she really imparted with not only her teaching, but her personality itself. I, you know, whenever I hear a violinist still, like, I feel like if I hear her version of something, like she is probably still to this day the best violinist I've ever heard. Any recording she's done of something, I think that's how I want to play it. I feel like that's how it's supposed to be done. And I'm sure you've heard the story with like the Sibelius recording she did that no one wanted to touch it, you know. Anyone from like David Oistrakh famously said, well, I'm not going to record it because she did it. It's perfect already. You know, so she was just so well respected within her time also. And just she's known her Sibelius is, yeah. You know, that's a thing. Everybody seems to know about that one. You know, any violinist who's worth their salt, it was like, oh, of course, you know, the Camilla Wicks recording. Yeah, no, and it's the type of thing. I mean, just such an interesting person at the same time. You know, just she's had quite the story herself. You know, she's kind of done it all. And done it well, you know, and that just, especially in the time she lived in, just didn't happen very much. So really, really quite the person. And, you know, and that's something I'd say I've definitely run into so many of Camilla's students around the country in various places that, you know, lived and worked. And everybody, as soon as they know, like all of a sudden you have to be friends. It's like you're part of the family. And like just everybody she taught or just end up being just nice, lovely people that, you know, they have this sense of camaraderie. And, you know, that's something she really did pass on. Or, you know, maybe that was something she looked for in students herself at the same time. So I have quite a few friends around the country that all studied with her, and they're just, you know, again, that was the bonding thing to start off from, and it was pretty cool.
This show is called Music That Matters, but the particular episode we're hearing could be called Teaching That Matters. So for our final person giving testimony, we're going to go to Meredith Arxey, who is the professor of violin at Washington State University and who has certainly engaged most deeply as a lifetime profession in teaching, to take us all the way back to the 80s and her experiences with Camilla Wicks.
I feel like I've been so fortunate to have wonderful teachers such as Kelly Ferris and Camilla. And then when I was a kid, I also had wonderful teachers in Seattle. I felt really valued by Camilla, and I know that all of her students felt the same way. And not only was she this amazing player, but she was also a great pedagogue, and we were just so inspired by her. One of my best memories, probably, was spending a summer at her house in Leavenworth. She allowed students to come and live with her, and we would practice and take lessons. Oh, there was one rule, and that was no practicing before 8 a.m. But some people broke that rule, and they'd start tuning a little bit before 8 so that, you know, that first note of their scales could be right at 8. But I'm not sure I was quite that driven. So the summers were really great. The living room is where she taught, and you could take a practice break because we practiced up in the bedrooms, and our each had a bedroom. We could take a practice break and come down and listen to another student's lessons. So we loved that, just to, you know, if somebody else was playing your piece, of course you wanted to go and get every little nugget out of what she was teaching somebody else to use for your own playing. We'd have recitals in the evenings and dinners together. We had such a good time that summer. So I studied with her for 4 years, one at the University of Washington and three at University of Michigan. And I think the biggest thing, her biggest influence on my teaching now is that at that point, she recognized my love for teaching. And she assigned me to work with some of her students who had trouble with things like vibrato or rhythm. And that really gave me self-esteem, and it clinched my desire to teach. She also really boosted my feelings of worthiness as a player because she told me that I would play solos with orchestras. And boy, that really gave me a boost. That gave me a new idea of maybe that I was okay and could actually play. And then I also became sort of her unofficial page turner for the recitals. I got to turn for all the pianists, and it just felt like I was special, even though everybody else had that same feeling of being special in Camilla's eyes. I already said that her playing was really great. Every one of us would be so excited if there was a recital coming up and she was doing a solo recital. We were like a big fan club, and there was this feeling of community and family with her at the center. So she's known for her sweetness, but but she also had this core of steel, I would say. And she would call you out if you needed it. At lessons, she'd been telling me to use vibrato even when it wasn't convenient. You know, like violinists all know that fourth finger is a pain and double stops. We have to remind ourselves to vibrate our notes before or after shifts, et cetera. And, you know, I took that a little casually. But at one studio class, she'd had enough of my lazy attitude towards vibrato. And she stopped me in the middle of the piece and yelled, "I have told you at every lesson to vibrate on every note." And I was sort of shocked, but her anger cured me of my laziness. So from that moment, vibrato has become more of a priority, actually a big priority. I feel like when I'm teaching and when I'm practicing, even though it's been so many years and I only worked with her for 4 years, I just still feel like she's there with me and she's encouraging me and demanding my best. Her saying was, "You need to make and strive for the highest possible goals. And although you don't quite reach them, you'll be so much higher than if you made reachable goals." That attitude has stuck with me of striving for things I know I can't really reach, but still really trying and then falling back to a place where I'm at a higher level than I would have been otherwise.
Encounters with Camilla Wicks over a span of almost 50 years, from violinists Kelly Ferris, Mick Wetzel, Stacy Wetzel, Amanda Howard Phillips, Caitlin McSherry, and Meredith Arksey. The connecting music all came from a benefit concert Camilla gave on November 4, 1973, for hospitals in Wenatchee and Lake Chelan. Her pianist was Horace Martinez.